Hey, can you folks hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Hey, welcome to the Monday, July 25th call for verifiable credentials for education. Our main topic today is Decentralized Identifiers 101. We're going to do some basic introductions to what DIDs are. And based on the decentralized identifier specification that was just approved by W3C. And we'll take a slight VC Edu angle to this, but it's going to be a pretty basic call so that we can start setting up some one-on-one documentation and get your questions and hopefully answer some of them. Okay, we have a few things to go over before we get started. The first is the IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. These are open calls. However, all substantive contributions to any of the CCD work items, as the specification items, should be done by members of the credential community group with full IPR agreements signed. To do that, first you would sign up for a W3 account, and then you would join the CCG, the credential community group. Secondly, these meetings, an audio recording, for these meetings, we do a transcription. So you will see a robot transcriber. You probably see it right now in the chat. And we also do an audio recording, and I believe we are now doing video recordings of these calls. If you see the transcriber is going awry and saying things that haven't been said or misinterpreting language, you can go ahead and help us with this so we can have the most accurate minutes possible by doing substitutions right in the chat in Jitsi. And you can do this by typing an S/ wrong term and then correct one. And I just put this in the chat right now. Let's see how to correct the transcriber. Thank you. On these calls, we also use a queue system. So to queue yourself up, please put a Q+ in the chat in Jitsi. Or to remove yourself from the queue, put a Q-. If you know what your comment is about, it's helpful for us to know, so maybe we can weave it into the conversation. You can queue yourself up with the words following, like the topic description, like this. And then I'm going to remove myself from the queue. Okay. Why don't we start with some introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone who's new to the call today or has come back to the call today and would like to tell us about themselves and maybe make an introduction or tell us about work that you're doing, anything that's changed for you? Just queue yourself up right now and we'd love to hear from you. Well, folks are debating that. I'm going to do a substitution right now. You'd be surprised how often the transcriber thinks that I think people should kill themselves in the queue. Okay, I don't see anyone in there. Feel free to change your mind later and join the queue, and we'd love to hear from you. Okay, next we have announcements and reminders. First is that any sort of upcoming CCG events are usually announced on this page. Also, there is a public mailing list for the CCG where agenda announcements are sent out for the primary group. We also have a mailing list specific for BC Edu that you can join here. I'll put this in the chat for you. This is actually an archive page, so you could click on this link and see all archived emails that happen on this thread, but there is a subscribe link that's a mail-to link that you can use to join the list. And all you do is send the email with subscribe in the subject. You don't need a message for that. Does anybody else here today have any announcements?
If you can hear me, I'll be happy to make one, Carrie. 1, 2, 1, 2. No.
I can hear you.
Phil Long, why don't you try again? I don't see you in the queue and I don't hear you.
All right. Does anybody hear me now?
Yes, I hear you, Phil.
Yeah. You hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. It doesn't look like Carrie can.
Oh. That's kind of strange. I think others said they could hear as well.
Okay. Can you hear me? Bill, can I touch base with you towards the end of the call and then see if
we have some... Carrie, can you hear us?
Then, okay.
Try again, Jonathan.
Okay, then.
Wait, Carrie, can you hear...
I am the one with sound issues, apparently. You can hear me, though, which is good. Give me one moment here. Okay. Phil Long, can you try that again? I think I may have fixed my audio.
All right. Is this better?
There you are. Yes. Yeah, sorry about that. Please.
That's all right. I just often have trouble connecting it in the GISTI. Just a quick note that we have submitted a paper to the Rebooting the Web of Trust on the endorsement credential, which we previewed some time ago at VCEDU. And I will put the link for that in chat, which I think is going to be here. Let me just grab it. And we will be holding a session hopefully sometime in the near future at another VCEDU meeting to kind of go over it in more detail. But that advanced paper is there. Thank you. By the way, that's with Dimitri and the one and only Carrie has come up with some papers.
Thanks, Phil. Phil's been working on this for a long time and really been pushing this topic. I highly suggest you take a look at this and read our thoughts on this and how this can be done. We'd like to work with all of you in this open community. Okay, the queue is empty. Dimitri and Simone, do you have anything before I get started on our DIDS 101?
Nothing from my end. Thank you.
Oh, go ahead, okay, Carrie.
Thank you. Thanks. Feel free to jump in at any time, and also let me know if there's anything in the queue so I can kind of keep an eye on it. Okay, I'm going to share my screen. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Before we get started, Jonathan, I see you just added yourself to the queue. Oh, no, you took yourself off from the queue. Are you all set?
I did do a thumbs up. Sorry.
Oh, good. Thank you. Okay. Okay, so the aims of this discussion. I'm having a little bit of feedback. If you have your mic on, would you mind? Or else I'm having some audio issues today. Oh, Phil. Oh, there we go. Okay, that's much better. Thank you. All right. So the aims of today's call is to basically have an introduction to decentralized identifiers and why this matters for us for educational training and achievement verifiable credentials. We're going to be doing this sort of deconstructing the DID core specification, really at a very, I would say at a very high level, but also at a, we're going to dig in a little bit, but we're not going to get into like, how do you actually implement this today? Right. So it is a sort of a broad understanding of how, what DIDs are, how they work, why we need them, and some examples of what they look like. Then what we're going to do is we're going to see if some questions come up. And later on, we're going to turn these slides into, in the archive of this call into, our resource. So please feel free to ask your questions. And I guarantee that if you have them, that others have them too. Also, we have quite a few people on the call today, and I know that many of you are very much more deeply experienced and knowledgeable about it, so I hope that you can jump on the queue and share what you know as well. Okay, so why do we need DIDs? So we have, right now we use a lot of globally unique identifiers, like telephone numbers, email addresses, usernames on websites, government ID numbers, domain names, and none of these are under our control. Right? We rent them. Someone gives them to us. They might be taken away from us, right? So for instance, or also they could be replicated. Like how many times have you gotten, a phishing email, a spam email, or even, a text that looks like it's coming from somebody. And these are things that exist out in the world that we use to like represent ourselves and to communicate, but they don't actually represent us. They aren't created by us at all. And that's how the internet has been all along. That's how the internet is probably going to be for some time. But in the meantime, now we have these decentralized identifiers where we can shift this a little bit. We should also note that in educational credentials like open badges, we've historically used email addresses to represent the learners. And this has been a problem because learners may, or individuals and learners may lose those email addresses from their institutions, or employers may take away those email addresses. I know like I've encountered this where I've had accounts with an email address, and then if I can't access that email address anymore, then I can't prove that I have control over it. And if you can't prove that you have control over the identifier that you are using for a credential, then you can't really prove that credential is yours. And maybe sometimes it doesn't matter in the short term, but it may matter longer in life. And that's sort of what we want to think about. Well, I'm going to put the link to the slides here in the chat for you, so you can follow along and have access to all the links. You may notice that in each slide, I've made links to that section of the doc, and also any sort of ancillary references. So for instance, at the bottom of this document, you have a link to the DID use cases where you can read more about why we're going to be, like how we could use DIDs and what those use cases are. Okay. So what is a DID, right? A centralized identifier, or a DID, is a globally unique identifier. It can, the specification says that it refers to any subject. This could be a person, an organization, a thing, a data model, abstract entity, anything. And as however the controller of the DID decides. And we talk about it in this context more for education or training or achievement credentials, but DIDs can also represent books or, supplies. Mostly they're used for supply management now than anything else. But because in this context, we want to want people to be able to use them and organizations to be able to use them. We're investigating them more right here at PCEDU. So DIDs are a globally unique identifier. They can be created by individuals or organizations to represent themselves. They create them. They create them using some kind of app or tool provided to create them whenever they want, however they want. That is the plan anyway. That is the idea. They can also be deleted, right? The control should be right there by the individuals or the organizations. You can have as many as you want. You can use them in as many different contexts as we want. And that is very different than how we use identifiers online now. DIDs are authenticated by proof of control using cryptographic proofs. And so what does that mean, right? This means cryptography works in a way that the way we often talk about it here anyway is public and private key pairs. So you have a private key, and that means that it is associated with a public key that the public can see. I often use a house analogy for this, where you might have the address of where I live, but you may not have the key to get into that house. And it's the private key that actually proves control of DITs. And we're not going to get too much into the different proof methods and encryption types that are out there. We could probably have another call about that as we get closer to PlugFest 2. But today I think it is enough probably to know that if you create a DID, you typically have a private key that you control to prove control of that DID. We are going to show one other example, though, called DIDWeb that that breaks that mold just a little bit. And I'm just going to check the queue and see if I should pause there if there's any questions. Okay. This is what a DID looks like. David, I see you in the queue. Just give them to get through this part, and then we could call on you. So DIDs are URIs. They associate a DID subject with a DID document. The DID document describes how a DID can be, how the proof of control can be verified. The actual statement from the specification says, DIDs are URIs that associate a DID subject with a DID document, allowing trustable interactions associated with that subject. And they look like this, right? And URIs actually look like this. So an example of another kind of a URI is a URL. Instead of DID here, which describes the scheme of this URI, you are much more familiar with seeing HTTPS, which describes how to access a URL in a web browser. With the DID, we have the scheme DID, right? This URI is a DID, and this is the DID method. And the DID method describes, there's so many of them, it describes how this DID can be verified. It points to the DID documents, and I'll get into that a little bit more. But each method provides different ways of proving control of the DID. And then lastly is the unique identifier for that DID method. Hey, David, you have the floor.
Thank you. You started off by saying that we don't control our identifiers. But I say to you, well, we don't really control any of our identity attributes. In order for us to assert identities, we have to have identity attributes asserted by trusted authorities. So if you tell somebody your name, they're not going to believe you. But if you show them your passport where your name's asserted by the government, then they will believe you. So the fact that I don't control my identifiers, I don't really care, because identifier is not me. If I tell somebody I am 123456, that doesn't really help. They want to know what my identity is, not what my identifier is. So I'm asserting that really identifiers don't really matter. They don't tell people who you are. They don't reveal your identity. And I'm not bothered that I don't control my passport number. You know, I'm quite happy for the government to change my passport number. So I think a lot of the reasons you gave why DIDs are great, really, when you look at them and inspect them, they don't really hold water. What is important is that users can have keys, okay, and they can digitally sign things to say that, you know, I'm asserting this statement and I can prove it. I've got the key because I can digitally sign with the private key. Yes, that is good. But actually, if you ask users to look after keys and that they're the only person who can, that's actually bad. I'll give you two reasons why that's bad. It's been estimated that 20% of Bitcoin's irretrievably lost. That money's just gone because people have lost their keys, forgotten their passwords, you know, lost their computer or whatever, and that's it. So if you're going to start to say that people's identities rely on keys that users must keep and look after themselves, I think when we come down to the population at large, then you're going to have a problem. And also, the seminal paper, Why Johnny Can't Encrypt, showed why users were not very good at looking after keys for PGP. So I don't think it's a good idea to actually say, this is your identifier and you're the only person who can access it. You should look after it for the rest of your life. I think that is also a bad model from a usability aspect. So those are just some reasons why I think some of the initial things you gave for DIDs, when you look at them in more detail, you think that perhaps they're not that good. Thank you.
I'm going to call on Dimitri, but first I just want to say thank you for sharing your opinion, David. Today, we're just reviewing what is in the DID document. Certainly, there are challenges to consider with any technology, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Dimitri?
I just wanted to sort of follow on to David's points. The thing that we sort of keep in mind in this discussion about DIDs is not even who is controlling it. Like, yes, DIDs enable individuals a lot more control about their both identity and identifier. But even for institutionally controlled identities, DIDs provide a number of technical features that make, even if none of the power structures, control structures, or anything like that changes, DIDs still enable to use previous systems just much easier and much better with rotation, revocation capabilities, discovery capabilities, and in addition to giving us a bigger URL space than just the web, for example, in which to explore various technologies.
Thank you. Thanks, Dimitri. I think it's great to have this this rounded discussion about it. And I'm just going to get back to our unpacking of the DID doc, DID core spec now. And then we hopefully will have some room at the end of the call to have further discussion about this topic. Okay, the next section that I have here in the slides come right from the document, from the specification. These are the design goals of decentralized identifiers. And I'm going to go through them pretty quickly here so that you sort of understand what the aims are for decentralized identifiers and understand sort of that angle of it a little bit better. So here's what the specification spells out. The first thing on the list is decentralization. And it states to eliminate the requirement for centralized authorities or single point of failure in identifier management, including the registration of globally unique identifiers and public verification keys. Second is control. This gives decentralized identifiers aim to give entities, both human and non-human, the power to directly control their digital identifiers without the need to rely on external authorities. Next is privacy. DIDs enable entities to control the privacy of their information, including minimal, selective, and progressive disclosure of attributes or other data. Then we have security. DIDs enable sufficient security for requesting parties to depend on DID documents for their required level of assurance. We're going to talk about DID documents a little bit next and how they work. Proof-based. DIDs enable DID controllers to provide cryptographic proof when they're interacting with other entities. Discoverability. Makes it possible for entities to discover DIDs for other entities and to learn more about or interact with those entities. Interoperability, which we talk about a lot here in this space, especially with verifiable credentials, is to use interoperable standards so that the DID infrastructure can make use of existing tools and software libraries designed for interoperability. We're going to have two tools that we're going to talk about in a little while. Next is portability. DID should be system, or aim to be system and network independent and enable entities to use their digital identifiers with any system that supports DIDs and DID methods. And simplicity. DIDs favor a reduced set of simple features to make the technology easier to understand, implement, and deploy. And lastly is extensibility. When possible, or where possible, DIDs enable extensibility provides it does not greatly hinder interoperability, portability, or simplicity. That's how they worded it in the documents. I'm reading it right from there. Let me see who is in the queue. I think I heard someone come up. Okay. Okay, so how do DIDs work? Like we said above, DIDs are URIs that associate the DID subject with a DID document that allows trustable interactions associated with that subject. This screenshot right here in the slide is a base example, a very simple example of a DID document that is in the specification. So this document contains information that's associated with the DID, such as ways to cryptographically authenticate the controller. It's the method of the DID that explains how to retrieve this DID document, and how the proof of control of the DID can be performed for that method. Okay. Does anybody have anything they want to ask right now? I don't see anyone in the queue, but I just want to make sure that everybody is still with me. Okay. Great. So we're going to go through three examples. These three examples were chosen because they were the top three methods that are being used by the PlugFest 1 participants. So just so you know, there was no favoritism on my part. This is just what the data shows. The first one, though, is a DID key. So this is what a DID key looks like. And you can see it is a DID. The name of the method is key. And then here's the unique identifier in this example. So the DID document for a DID key explains the cryptographic method that's associated with the DID. And it looks like this. And this all provides the information that you need to prove control of a DID key. Note that a DID key doesn't use a blockchain at all. It relies on the holder of the DID to prove that they have control of the private key that is associated with the public key in the DID document, and that is that. There is no blockchain involved. There's no writing to a blockchain. It is simply stored on the computer that is being used, or the app, the mobile device that's being used. It's generated there and stored there. DID keys being used a lot right now because it's really easy to implement. There's a lot of libraries for it. And most of the implementations right now, at least in our VC Edu space, are the pilots that are using this. The next example that we have here is DIDWeb. DIDWeb is based on the URL. This note that I put here comes from the DIDWeb explanation. Here in the registry, it's a fully qualified domain name that's secured by TLS or SSL certificate, with an optional path to a DID document. And how this works is that someone applies for for a domain name at a register. And then they associate that domain name with an IP address where it can be located. And then a DID document with the JSON-LD that looks something like this is actually stored on that server where that domain is. And that is how that one works. There are no keys involved. It is all done through the SSL register and improving control of the domain. And the third one that's the most popular being used, because especially it's a very early one, is DIDSOF. It's only in red here because that's how it is in the specification. And this is a screenshot. It's not red because, you know, red to me is a very strong color. Anyway, this is an example of a DIDSOF. And it's created on a public blockchain called Sovereign. It reads directly from Sovereign. And then a DID document is generated from that, what is the result of the pull from the Sovereign blockchain. And then proof of control is still based on the cryptographic key pairs. All right. Those are three examples that we have. But as of the publication of the DID spec, there are over 130 DIDs. It's a lot, right? Will a typical user need to look up all of these DIDs? Probably not. Most applications will decide which ones to implement. And over time, the market will probably decide which ones they use the most. But until then, probably there's going to be more before there will be less. And what we have to look up DIDs is the DID specification registry. And it contains an alphabetical list of the DID methods. It right here. Quite a few of these are using blockchain. In fact, I think maybe all of them are using blockchain, or some describe how to move from one blockchain to another. I believe that is how carry works, although I need to learn a little bit more about that. Some are ledger agnostic too. But this registry actually serves as the official registry, and it stores all known global parameters, the properties, the values. So all of these documents here actually are referenced from here. So all of the information, if you want to learn how to read the document, retrieve the document, and verify the DID, all could be stored in the registry. And so you can learn how to do that and decide which DIDs your applications are going to use. But now we have a couple of tools that I'm just going to highlight today. One is DidActor. We use DidActor quite a bit during the PlugFest. And on DidActor, you can create and resolve DIDs. You can also create and verify credentials and presentations. It's really super easy to use, and it's a good way to go in and just play with things. I don't know how many different types of DIDs you can create. It looks like maybe you can only create DID key on here. But still, it's a way to try that out and see how that works. And then secondly, we have a universal resolver. So what the resolver does is it says, it retrieves the actual document. And I think that Marcus from Danube Tech is here. Marcus, are you here today still? You'd mentioned you would be here and could sort of talk about the universal resolver.
I'm here, yes. Hello, Carrie.
Hi. Do you mind explaining the resolver?
Yes, no problem.
Would you like me to hand the screen over to you, or should I just leave it on the screen here?
You can also leave it here with you for now. I think you've already explained all the important concepts very well. So as you said, the DIDs have associated DID documents, and you also explained the concept of a DID method. As you said, there are a lot of them, and for each DID method, the process how you get from the DID to the DID document is very different, right? You mentioned that some DID methods use blockchains, and other DID methods do not use blockchains. And that's one of the features of DIDs if you think about it, this kind of abstraction layer and the fact that DITs can work very differently underneath. So that this process, how you get from the DIT to the DIT document. Initially, a few years ago, when we started to work on DITs, we thought they would all be blockchain based, and we thought we would need different DIT methods because, you know, there was Bitcoin and there was Ethereum and there was Sovereign and there was Veris One, and then those were all ledgers, and we thought that's why we need DIT methods. But over time, the concept of a DIT method has become much more flexible, and people have come up with very innovative types of DITs, including things like DIT Web and DIT Key that you mentioned. But what they all have in common is that there's always this resolution step where you can get to the DIT document. And the Universal Resolver is an implementation of, I think, about 45 different DIT methods. So you can pass in a DIT key, DIT web, DIT solve, DIT indi, and so on. And it will be able to resolve it. And it does that by using a set of what we call drivers, right? So it has a list of drivers, and each driver implements a DIT method, and that's how it becomes a universal resolver. And it can be useful in scenarios when you're building applications and services that you want to be compatible with different DIT methods. Then this can be a useful tool. Of course, it also has some drawbacks, probably. On the technical level, it's a pretty heavyweight service. It's operated as a service with a remote endpoint, right? So you run it as a remote service. It may introduce some dependencies that you may not always want. So for example, if you're just building applications and services that should work with DIT Web and DIT Key, then probably you don't need this tool, because it's very easy to resolve DIT Web and DIT Key, and you don't need to use such a heavyweight remote service like the Universal Resolver. But if you want to be compatible with many DIT methods, then this could be useful. And the final thing I will say is this is a community maintained tool, right? So this is an open source project at the Decentralized Identity Foundation. And those drivers, those implementations of different DIT methods, they come from different communities. They typically come from the same community that also invented the DIT method, right? That's the intention. If you design a new DIT method, then it would be nice to also contribute a driver for the Universal Resolver so that people can resolve your DIT method.
Thank you, Marcus. That's great. One question I have for you is, you mentioned that it's a service. Is there some open source code or libraries that people can install on their own applications instead of using the service?
The whole thing is open source. So what you're looking at here, the user interface, the API, and the set of these drivers, you can take all of that and you can deploy it on your own server, right? So people are not really supposed to rely on this one instance that you're looking at, where it says dev.uniresolver.io. That's one instance of the Universal Resolver, which DIF is operating for the community, and maybe it's good enough for some experimentation, but you should not rely on this one endpoint. There's also a little warning sign on the top right corner of the page.
So yes. Yeah,
this one. So it explains the downsides of this, but it's open source, and you can run your own instance of that instead of relying on the instance that you're looking at.
I just put a link to GitHub in the chat. Is that the correct repository?
Yes, that is the source repository, and that has some information also on how it works and how to contribute drivers and how to install it. And maybe I
Great,
can.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll just quickly also post a second repository. So there's a lesser known second open source project, which is called Universal Registrar. So that's a similar idea, similar design, but that is not for resolving deeds. That's for creating and updating and deactivating deeds. And it's a bit more experimental. It's not so mature and it doesn't support that many did methods. But it's also modeled after the universal resolver. So same idea, but for creating and managing deeds rather than resolving deeds.
Thank you, Marcus. That's great. Really appreciate this work that you all do. I'm also, while we're here, I was looking up the GitHub repo for didactor. I'm going to put that in the chat as well. Because folks who are interested in doing this may be able to look at that source and sort of back into how they would create dids on their system. Yeah, the queue is still empty. The last thing I had for today for now is these are all of the references that were mentioned throughout these slides. The only one that I did not reference here, and I didn't get into it too much at all, actually, is a DID rubric. And this may be interesting to some of you who are trying to evaluate which DIDs to use. The DID rubric is a scoring guide that's used to evaluate DIDs. And you can take a look at that and see the examples that they've provided. It's done really well. They've provided, like, you know, what are the processes, what are the requirements, and then what are some examples and how they were scored. Just to give you a comparison for how you would evaluate DIDs for your own systems. Okay, that is the end of the slides for now, and what I have to present for now as part of this DID 101. Does anybody have any questions that they would like to ask that you think others on your teams may have, and we can do our best to answer them, or, you know, have any other sort of discussions about DIDs while we're here, especially in relation to verifiable credentials for education? Okay, David?
You have the floor. This is not related to the actual presentation as such, but to the fact that the earlier talk that I gave, none of it appeared into the transcription. I just wondered why that was.
Oh, I don't know.
And I think none of this is appearing in the transcription either.
Uh-oh. I can restart the transcriber. Thank you for noticing that. It doesn't say that it's not running, and I see it transcribing here, so I'm not sure it's capturing everything.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be capturing anything that I say. It captured what Marcus just said, because I was watching that, and it captured what Dimitri said earlier on, so I don't know if it's something specific with my laptop. I don't know if there are any controls you can set.
I don't have any controls, and it should not be specific to any individuals. It is just based on whatever. This is all based on the Google transcriber. And so it just picks up whatever it hears and does its best to translate, you know.
So it doesn't depend on what browser you're using, for example.
That's a good question. I don't know. What browser are you using?
I'm using Firefox. Yeah, I'm using Firefox. Well,
it should work with Firefox. I'm going to look into that. I'm not using Firefox right now, although I'm planning on switching to that. So that's good to know.
Okay.
I think some people are because we were having trouble with other browsers. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that so we can look into it.
Yeah. Good. I think that's something to look into because it might affect other people as well.
Absolutely. We'd like to capture as much as we can. Fortunately, we do have the audio, and that will be sent out with the minutes. But I'll take a look at that.
Okay.
You have the floor.
Yes, thank you.
There you go. Yep, you have the floor. David, can you hear me? I can't hear you. Hopefully it's not me again. Can anybody else hear David? Not me. Okay, good. sorry, David. Do you want to type something into the chat? Okay. The design goal of discoverability. Let me go back to that slide here. Oh, that's a good question. So David says he hasn't seen anything showing how to discover DIDs or other entities. That's a good question. Dimitri, do you know of anything about discovering DIDs? About any sort of work out there?
Sure. And Marcus, feel free to jump in and say more. Well, so you're absolutely right. The question of discovering DIDs and associating DIDs with entities, you know, governments, companies, or people, whatever your use case may be, is essential. Couple of methods are being proposed. Some of methods depend on some of the ways of discovery depend on the DID method itself. For example, there's a couple of specs that allow you, if you know the organizations or the cell or the person, web URL, it allows you to discover what the DID that entity is using from the web URL. It's essentially a file that you post on your website. That's one option. Another option is to bootstrap the TLS certificate. So if you, again, if you know somebody's URL, you can load their TLS certificate and sign up. So that's an onboarding sort of way to relate legacy information like URLs to somebody's DID. But obviously, not everybody is going to be hosting DID discovery documents on their website. What other options? Another approach taken by the community is the notion of trust registry. So for example, here in the education community, DIDs themselves typically do not carry things like name of the institution or its sort of trail of legitimacy or any certifications or anything like that. It could be put into the DID document using the service endpoint mechanism, but currently typically it's so what trust registries provide is a directory, much like in phone days we have the white pages and yellow pages of how do you discover an entity's phone number. Similarly, trust registries and DID directories. So as other methods of bootstrapping trust and and letting people discover the DIDs of entities have to do with physical places like QR codes at offices, or much more common, a part of contact, right? The notion of handing over your business card, in a sense, is a discovery mechanism. Because you know the entity, and then here are a bunch of identifiers. You know, phone number, and now DID, that is associated with that. So, basically, all of the techniques from phone and email days of discovery apply, plus we have some.
Thanks, Dimitri. Marcus?
I agree with everything that Dimitri said. I can think of one more potential approach to discover deeds. Remember that a lot of the deed methods are based on ledgers or blockchains, which means that for some of the deed methods, all the deeds are globally visible, right? If you create a sovereign deed, or you create an EBSI deed or an ION deed, then anyone can see all the deeds that exist globally. And often you will not know anything about these deeds, right? So in many cases, the deed is just a deed and there's no other data associated with it, which is often a good thing. And therefore, you don't really know anything about the deed, but in theory, it would be possible to have also public data associated with those publicly visible deeds, right? For example, I've heard some use cases or ideas where a deed in the deed document could have a service endpoint, which points to some place, for example, a decentralized web node or something else, but it points to something where you can actually discover public information about the deed, like the name of the organization, for example. And if you do that, then you could in theory index all those public deeds plus all the data that's available about it. And you could have something like a Google of deeds, basically, where you index the deeds with the associated public data. And that's something that hopefully would be done for deeds of organizations and companies and not so much for personal deeds. But that could be another approach where you then run searches or discovery processes against this public set of deeds.
Thank you, Marcus. Does anybody else have any questions? Kate, you have the floor.
I just want you to repost that link to the Google slide deck. Could you do that?
I sure can. Let me go to the top here. Okay, here you go. So ideally what we do is take the slide deck, gathering your questions, and put this out there as a resource on the VC Edu website, and start compiling more and more resources, because we're getting to the stage where more and more pilots are happening and more questions are coming in. And it's just time to start building out documentation to help folks really get started and digging into this. And my experience, a multimodal approach to this works best. You have very many different documents to look at, documentation to reference, and at some point, different parts of each one help gather understanding. And this is how I work as a developer. Sometimes it takes me 20 different references before it really clicks with me and I know I've got it right. And we'd like to do the best we can to help folks get it right. Anybody else have any questions? Okay. About 4 minutes left, so I'm going to let folks have that time back. I appreciate all of you being here today. I will do the minutes soon and send those out. And, of course, feel free to reach out with any questions, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.